and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Safer Podcast Network. We are transitioning a little bit from the actual meat of football season into basketball season now as ACC play gets going here. Obviously, a lot of football stuff still going. We'll talk about the transfer portal a lot in the coming days as that just opened today as we record this podcast on January 2nd. So we'll talk about that more later. I did promise that we'd have Brandon Marks from The Athletic today for the second podcast this week. He will come on next week. So we shifted things a little bit. And here to react to Virginia basketball's last game of 2025 is Cuts from the Corner. You all know him. Head to cutsfromthecorner.com for some of the best analysis covering UVA hoops. Cuts, I'd like to have you on here after a better game, but it was a game that has a lot to talk about nonetheless.
Yeah, I was going to – thanks for having me, by the way. And I was going to say, I wish it could have been better circumstances. A loss from Tech is never the one you want to revel in, but there is a lot to learn. So I'm happy to be on to talk about it.
I mean, for one, there's three overtimes. So there's a lot of basketball just in that one game to talk about. So yeah, Hokies win 95-85 in triple overtime. Virginia goes to 0-1 to start ACC playoff on New Year's Eve. They led at halftime miraculously after a pretty bad first half shooting performance. But they're now 11-1 after leading at halftime. They were previously 11-0. So a couple stats here just to top things off, and then we'll just get some overall thoughts. Worst field goal percentage of the season, 36%. Second worst three-point percentage at 22.2%. But also on their most three-point attempts, 45. Of course, you know, playing three overtimes has something to do with that. And then the second most turnovers behind just that Dayton game. So just overall thoughts, Cuts, on what you saw in Blacksburg on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where there were basically two key factors, I thought, that just kind of defined the whole game for us. And one was really uncharacteristically poor shooting, especially from outside. You know, this wasn't one of those situations where just everything was contested and we were missing all of these tough looks. We had a ton of open looks. We had looks, especially at the end, by design to our bigs that they weren't taking. But we had guards getting open looks. We had our forwards getting, I mean, you know, there were just so many open threes, and we were not only missing them, but we were just missing them badly. I mean, we looked so uncomfortable, even on some of our makes, like Dallin Hall's one make was a bank, right? I mean, we were missing like short, like crazy. We were kind of like missing rim entirely. I mean, it just, everyone looked so unnatural and uncomfortable, which is sort of an anomaly that we've seen from any time in the season, except for when we were at Greenbrier. So, you know, that sort of defined the game. I mean, we still took, as you mentioned, a lot of threes, and some of that was overtime, but some of that's because as the game sort of went on, you know, Tech was giving us some of those looks intentionally, so in some cases. So, you know, I don't expect that's going to be something that we replicate many times down the road, but it was something that we had to sort of work through and try to find a way to overcome, and I didn't think we, you know, did the best job of adjusting to that. And then the other thing was we just couldn't keep them off of the offensive glass. I mean, the defense before the shot was, I thought, very good for the most part across the board. I mean, there were some lapses, and then, you know, toward the end of the game, you know, they had some pretty, you know, great individual offensive plays to get some buckets. But, you know, in regulation, the game was tied at 55. You know, I thought the defense really showed up, and Tech didn't shoot great either. But just not being able to sort of secure the glass sort of doomed us on that end.
Yeah, it's interesting because Virginia Tech came into this not a great offensive rebounding team, but that seems like an adjustment that maybe Mike Young made just due to some of maybe their limitations. And obviously, they came in without two of their starters and Tyler Johnson and Toby LaWall. LaWall had missed a couple games this season, and then Antonio Dorn, a key player, coming off the bench. Virginia, on the other hand, did not have Jakari White, another key player for them. So both teams limited in their personnel in this game, and it led to a lot of interesting, curious decisions. That's why I'm going to call this not overreactions, because it's one game, but curiosities rather. So we're just going to talk about a couple things that we saw from Ryan Odom in this game that raised a not a red flag, but just okay, what's going on here? So the first one is just from the get go. Virginia's had the same starting lineup through their first I guess 11 games this season, and they made their first starting lineup change going into this Virginia Tech game, putting Devin Tillis in at the three and putting Sam Lewis onto the bench. A lot of questions about, kind of why that was made, and why that decision was happening. But to me, there's a couple things with that that were curious to me, because Devin Tillis in that way, because if Virginia Tech has a pretty big starting lineup, even when they, are missing a couple guys, Abdallah's obviously being your 6'9" point guard is going to make you a little bit bigger. But Tillis was defending Jaden Shutt, their best 3-point shooter, who does a lot of movement shooting. And so having your 6'6" power forward running around and trying to chase this guy, it didn't seem like the best idea. And then there's a lot of Devin Tillis overall in the game.
Yeah, I mean there really was, and it you know I'm really curious as to what the thought process was in starting him. And then he didn't start after the second half, but then he played throughout most of overtimes. And I've heard speculation, but it's only speculation, that maybe there were Sam Lewis was a little under the weather. It would make sense, and he made some uncharacteristic mental mistakes when he was in. It's not like when he was in he was playing amazingly. But I didn't really see. Well, let me back up. At the beginning of the game, I didn't really see the logic in the Tillis stuff. I think as I rewatched the game and kind of went through it, he got more of those isolations toward the end, which I don't think was the right way to go and approach it. But at the same time, I think I see how we got there. So we can revisit that. But when he started the game, the defensive assignment didn't really make a ton of sense to me. I mean, when he was on the floor, he was chasing Shutt, as you mentioned, which, in one of those, overtimes, there was a pretty big shot that kind of burned us on. But it's not like Lewis didn't give up a couple shots to him as well. The defense, I would say, still as a whole, wasn't really terrible with him out there. I mean, again, he played a lot of that game, 55 points in the first half. I think the thought was maybe that his just overall size would help on the glass some. It didn't really make that big of an impact. The thing I didn't like about it most was that they really didn't play him on Abdallah much, which I thought when Lewis was in, they did play him on him some, and it allowed Hall to shift off. And I like that matchup better for us when, especially before Abdallah hurt his ankle. When he was in there, he was chasing. So now you had Hall on Abdallah, and I thought Hall actually did pretty admirably, all things considered, but still kind of gave up some of those just where he got shot over. Whereas when you had Lewis out there chasing and playing him, it was a lot harder for Abdallah on that end. So I thought the defensive strategy, even though it wasn't bad, it didn't make a ton of sense to me. And then on the offensive end, I think the thought was, he provides you more shooting. You can kind of have that playmaking hub. But no one was shooting well, including Tillis. I mean, Tillis was he at least hit two. He was 2 for 7 from deep. But they ended up trying to play through him in that mid-post playmaking hub type role a lot, especially in the second half. And I think they were doing that because they were having a hard time getting Tech to not sink off the ball screen because we were shooting so poorly. So they were looking for like a backup option in terms of how can we initiate? I think DeRidder came on strong toward the end of the game, but early on he was playing a little more reserved. He wasn't really showing that confidence. He had a couple of bad turnovers. So I think the thought process was that maybe that wasn't the right way to go, and they needed to play through Tillis. There were a couple of possessions where he drew some double teams and was able to kind of pass it out, and it led to something, a little bit better than we had been getting. But then anytime he tried to like score individually out of that, he was just sort of like, bothered by the length and wasn't able to finish around the rim. So, it was an odd choice to put so many possessions there because I didn't see it was really benefiting us more than a lot of the other options we were pursuing. I would really like to have seen us really force it more inside, try to, play DeRidder on that low post more, but even get Grunlow in that low post a little bit more and kind of like let him, take some more shots down there. Early in the game, he had been successful, catching the ball low and finishing around the rim. He and DeRitter had some nice interplay, especially throughout the game, but they didn't really use that high-low ball screen as much as I thought they could. And when they did, it was fairly effective. So, I think we were scared away from a few of the turnovers from DeRitter, and there was like an entry pass to Grunlow late in the game that mid second half that kind of resulted in a turnover. So we thought maybe we'd play through Tillis. But I'd like to have seen us try to make more of an effort to get some of our bigs the ball deeper as opposed to kind of playing through that mid post.
Yeah, you talk about playing through Tillis. He kind of took over point guard. Like he was bringing the ball up the floor once Dallin Hall fouled out and Chance Mallory was out with injury in the third overtime. But yeah, a couple of those after timeout plays where the call was to get Tillis into one of those back down situations. Neither one of them worked in those situations, and it was just curious because in a game where Test Rader, like you had mentioned, had started to kind of catch fire, and Malik Thomas had a good overall game as well, that you wouldn't just try to put the ball in the hands of your best shot creator and you go towards Tillis in those situations. So that was curious. Speaking of Thomas, so Malik Thomas, pretty decent game in regulation. There were still some, characteristic, turnovers or mistakes on the defensive end that has kind of plagued him this season. But you sub him out with 3 minutes left in regulation. He does not return until Dallin Hall fouls out with 14 seconds left in the second overtime. Coincidentally, in those 14 seconds, he scores 6 points to help Virginia kind of come back and tie this game in the second overtime when it looked like all was lost. He also kind of had the assist to Chance Mallory on his miss from three that Mallory put back in right before the buzzer. It was curious though, Malik Thomas, kind of went silent for a little bit there, and he wasn't in the game. And I know sometimes there's problems with lapses on defense, and sometimes he just doesn't fit into the flow of the offense, but ends up with 26 points, a season high for him, for Virginia. Just what'd you think of that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I've been very critical of Thomas's defense over this season, and I've been pretty complimentary of Odom for being willing to scale back his minutes accordingly when things were going well on the offensive end to kind of account for that. But I actually thought he played pretty well defensively. I mean, there were a couple of moments where he gave up some buckets in this game, but overall, I didn't think he was considerably worse than pretty much anyone out there. He had a decent block from behind. He had another deflection that caused a steal. I mean, he wasn't getting beaten regularly. He was doing a fine job of chasing shut around. I mean, he could have played that role, I think, pretty well. So I didn't see the defense. I think that was more of like a trust thing from the whole season is kind of likely what it boils down to. But I think we're going to need to trust Malik Thomas because this was kind of exactly the kind of game we needed him on the floor because he's really sort of sometimes his offense doesn't come in the flow of everything else we're doing, but when the flow of everything else we're doing is not working because no one's hitting any of these open shots and we just can't play the way we normally do, he's got to be that kind of like option that you turn to go get you a bucket. And he was doing that pretty effectively, he and DeRitter throughout the first half, but through that overtime as well. He was one of the only players who was really kind of getting into the lane consistently and either drawing contact and getting to the line or making a bucket. He wasn't shooting great from outside either, but he had the confidence to keep firing. I mean, I guess all of the guys did, or most of them. But he was getting to that mid-range game. He was getting to the lane, and he sort of had to be accounted for. And I didn't see a notable drop off. I mean, marginally, but nothing to be concerned about defensively when he was out there. So, I thought the overtime management was a struggle in general because it seemed like we narrowed in on a five that we wanted to play. And, of course, you don't expect to go to three overtimes, right? So you don't expect that fatigue to build up. But, we really played that group and we rotated Onyenso for Grunlow a little bit. We played Sam Lewis a little bit, but for the most part, we went with that Mallory, Hall, Tillis, DeRitter, Grunlow five. And I'd like to have seen Thomas mix in there pretty heavily as well.
Yeah, I was texting a friend during the game as we're kind of midway through the second half, and the question was, what five do you want to close this game right now? And it was a tricky question because no one was playing that great. I think DeRitter was starting to warm up and starting to get to where he was at the end of regulation. So he was an obvious one. I think, even if he wasn't playing that great, you still probably want him out there. But it was hard to kind of narrow in on a five, but you kind of said Malik Thomas because he had done enough to kind of keep them in this game and keep them going throughout. And he's just one of the better shot creators on the team. And that's why a lot of people, with Jakari White being out, I kind of focused on Malik Thomas and being like, well, now's the time to kind of go to more of his offense and try to work that into the flow of how they're doing things offensively, because he can create buckets and he's probably one of your best shot creators out there. He had 20 shots in this game, tied for the team high with DeRitter, went 8 for 20, 2 of 9 for three. No one was hitting threes consistently in this game. And we could talk about that too. But yeah, I thought overall it was a really good game for Malik Thomas. Coincidentally, I don't know, take this stat for what you will. They are 0-2 now in games where Malik Thomas is the leading scorer, because the only other time was against Butler. I think that's a little bit, not exactly causation, maybe not even correlation, just a stat to take home. But we mentioned the bad shooting. Is one of the probably the worst overall shooting game of the season for Virginia. Shooting in odd places, though. Three worst shooting performances this season have come twice in the ballroom against Northwestern and Butler down at the Greenbrier. And I call it the Turkey Cave there at Castle Coliseum, because it's a different setting when you go in there. It's darker, it's a very different kind of college basketball environment.
Yeah, and it sounds like they didn't really even have an opportunity to do a full shoot around beforehand because of some traffic issues, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about the shooting performance at all, honestly. I mean, it almost doesn't really matter the reason why the shooting was so poor in this game, but I do think there's something to the fact that the three times they've shot poorly all year were kind of dimly lit caves with weird backgrounds, and it's unfortunate that one of those is in our conference. But I mean, like, you could tell it wasn't just one of these things. I mean, shooting's muscle memory, and it was one of these things where, everyone just looked so uncomfortable and everything was missing so badly, like open shots that they're normally just draining and unconscious. And, players were second guessing looks that they normally don't at all, in taking early threes ended up just being a bad shot in this game for the most part, which normally it's one of our best, ways of scoring kind of in bulk offense. So, I think we've proven throughout the season that under normal circumstances, we're going to be a very good shooting team, if not a great shooting team. I'm not really worried about that long term. And I'm not really so much worried about this outcome sort of being something that happens regularly. But I do think, we're going to have to find a way to be successful when the shots aren't falling, because, it's happened a couple of times. You don't know all the environments and circumstances you're going to play in. And sometimes you're going to have games where people just, aren't on, and it could be, it could be for a break. It could be because they were, out for a while. It could be because of other circumstances. It could be because illness. It could, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. So we have to find a way to be able to consistently get those points and run our offense when that sort of core element of our game that's so instrumental to what we do isn't available.
Yeah, they're still third in the ACC in 3-point percentage right now, 37.5, and I think they take the fifth most 3-point attempts per game right now. So it's still a pretty good shooting display overall for the season. Like you said, though, there's just something weird about some of these environments that they're in that, maybe aren't your typical college basketball environments where they have struggled a few times this year. But yeah, overall, I think, this team is still chock full of good shooters. But like you said, I was looking at Grunlow, Johan Grunlow specifically, because there's a couple times that he shot the ball and I'm just like, he's not seeing the hoop well. Like he was hesitating, and
Oh
then
yeah.
you saw a lot in the second half. Tech was just leaving him wide open and he was still passing that up on shots that he would normally take. And so there's a lot of second guessing going on, just because the shots hadn't been falling. And so I think that kind of took Virginia a little bit of out of what they're doing offensively too. On the other end, defensively, there was a lot of scrambling and switching and all that stuff. And this has kind of been more, one of the more consistent themes of the year. This is kind of not less a curiosity and more of a consistent red flag is the offensive rebounding. Virginia Tech was not a good offensive rebounding team coming into this game, but Imani Hansberry and Christian Gerdak, their backup center, just kind of completely abused Virginia on the offensive glass or the defensive glass. Second most offensive rebounds Virginia has allowed this season. It was just kind of every time Virginia Tech put a shot up, you thought they were going to get a second chance point.
Yeah, I mean it was really rough. And I do think, if there's, a consistent I think, the defense is something that I've been writing about has been improving as a whole. Right? Like through the Maryland game, even though the score kind of wasn't necessarily indicative of that, through the American game, you could see that like their overall defense has been gelling and they've been doing a better job of rotating and communicating. I thought that was true in this game as well, but to your point, they just couldn't secure the glass, and that's sort of what kept Virginia Tech around because they weren't shooting it great either across the board. So, I'm not sure the fix there. I mean, some of it was just we got out physicaled. I think Tech got away with a lot of pushing down low that we did not get away with. That was actually one of the most, I mean, probably the most lopsided part of the game, aside from maybe some of the screening that wasn't called. But like, yeah, I mean, they got away with just full on like shoving some of our guys out of the way. So it's not like, it wasn't hotly contested. And in some cases, our guys were, in good positions and we're still getting called. Meanwhile, on the other side, we were getting called for offensive rebounding fouls all the time, right? But regardless, it was still a concern because, we'd get caught out of position with either Grunlow lower and Lienzo trying to block a shot, and on the back end we'd be trying to scramble. I think the thought was that Tillis would help some in that regard, and I don't think he was really any more effective than when we had some of our other lineups out there when he was at the three trying to kind of secure that. There's a lot of times where he'd get kind of caught out of position, and then he w wouldn't really be able to get back in and affect the play because he just didn't really have the bounce to do that, right? So I'm not sure what the fix is there. I mean, I'm happy with the sort of pre-shot defense. Overall, I think ideally, if we could kind of get our centers pulled away a little bit less, that would be better. But there were some times where Grunlow and Onyensa were in good defensive rebounding position and still gave up the board. So they're going to have to get a little tougher there. They're going to have to be a little more physical, push back, and see what comes of it, and hopefully get a few more calls along the way when they're in good position and get kind of cleared out. But yeah, that's I think that's going to be. Of all of our sort of broad issues or themes that come up, I think that's going to be the one that probably rings true for most of the season and is harder to correct.
Yeah, 22 second chance points for Virginia Tech. 15 of their 20 offensive rebounds came from Imani Hansberry and Christian Gerdak. Those guys were all over the boards. Like you said, a couple of times Virginia players were in good position. A couple of times for Grunlow and others. You mentioned the fouls, so I'm going to give you a chance because I know it's been a hot topic as well. Virginia had 27 fouls in this game compared to 16 for Virginia Tech. And, Virginia was fouling towards the end there to kind of extend the game in a couple situations there. And I think Virginia Tech was a lot more aggressive going towards the rim. And so when that happens, you do get the benefit of some calls. I mean, Ben Hammond, who came in off the bench for them in this game, had. How many free
30
throws did he
points.
have? He had 18 free throws. Yeah, he had 30 points, but 18 free throws in this game. He was 16 of 18 from the line. And so obviously, aggression usually benefits the aggressor in this situation, and that's kind of what happened. But there was a very quick whistle on some, box outs for Virginia and some calls underneath the rim that, we can't get fined on this podcast, but if anyone else talked about it, the ACC might find them.
Look, I mean, you can't blame the game on officiating. I mean, there were some, the goaltend at the end of regulation was not a
Absolutely.
goaltend. I mean, that was a catastrophe. They also whistled on Yenso for a defensive rebounding foul where he like lightly had his hand around, I think it was Burdick, and gave them two free throws. I mean, like when we had forced a stop. I mean, there were some really phantom, really sort of bad calls that were very impactful in terms of when they were called. But overall, you still can't just blame the game on officiating. I mean, it's not, I think, obviously when you take 45 threes, you're not going to draw as many fouls. And I think a big problem was, we were not forcing the issue inside, with the right people as much as I would have liked to have seen, right? Like, I think, if we had played through DeRidder down low more, even when he had some turnovers early, like still kind of forced that issue, not necessarily just had him on the perimeter as much. If we had played through Grunlow and Onyenso a little bit more and down low, we had some good opportunities to do that and were effective when we did it. We would have gotten some more contact. I think that there were still some things that weren't called, that when I look back, we're like, well, that was a clear foul. I think actually what benefited Tech the most though was some of the non-calls, right? Like, we were getting called for like Mallory scrapping for offensive rebounds, got a call once. And we made some bad fouls. I mean, the DeRidder frustration foul after he missed a free throw. I mean, we made some bad fouls at some bad moments. So it's not saying that we didn't. But yeah, there was clearly like a level of physicality that Tech was able to get away with on the offensive end, fighting for boards, setting screens, that we were not able to get away with on our end. And that was visible throughout the game very clearly. So, hopefully that won't, dimly lit cave won't affect referees' eyes in future games. We'll see. But, either way, I think that game was still, attainable and winnable for us, if we had just shifted our mentality a little bit in terms of how we were trying to play.
Can you guess when Virginia Tech went into the bonus in this game?
I think it was like shortly after the first TV timeout, right?
14:47 in the game, they were in the bonus. Which is I don't know if there's a record if the NCAA keeps stats on that, but that's the quickest I've ever seen a team get into the bonus. And so Virginia Tech was shooting free throws the rest of the way, and like Virginia was still like late in this game and trying to get into the bonus in this one. So it was an interesting part. They definitely had an impact on the game because Virginia, like you mentioned, Tess DeRidder had that terrible foul 90 feet away from the basket, but that sent them to the free throw line for two shots. And that kept happening. I think there are some other ones that happened kind of on the offensive end of the floor. So Virginia Tech just kept getting free points because Virginia was fouling away from the hoop, and they're already in the double bonus. So part of that's on Virginia, and part of that's just on the mass amount of fouls Virginia Tech was able to pick up in this one. I do want to transition now to where UVA is as we kind of get into the ACC play now. They're 0-1, obviously, in ACC, but are you deterred at all by opening ACC play with this loss to Virginia Tech? Or is it more of just like, okay, we saw what happened. I think a lot of that is fixable, and they can kind of get things back on track quickly here in ACC play.
I mean, I'm not deterred at all. I don't think anything about that game speaks to our ceiling and our ability to play well. I mean, I think we've seen when this team has played, at its best that it's capable of competing with anyone. I really believe that. What really limited us in this game was our lack of shooting, which is kind of a characteristic strength of this team. Tech was defending us in a way, if other teams tried to follow this model, I think that they will get killed basically, where they were, anytime we set a ball screen, they were, especially toward the end of the game, they were sagging hard two men on the dribbler to kind of limit any penetration. They were leaving our center up top and then recovering to him, and our centers just flat out stopped shooting the ball. But they were also on those plays sagging, dropping three men into the middle of the paint, like aggressively to clog everything up, and also sort of allowing, you know, our other players who were off the ball to kind of be willing to live with the fact that we could catch and shoot those and they could contest. You know, I think if other teams try to follow that model, we're just going to burn them with great free, you know, great shooting. So, you know, I'm not worried about Tech somehow have showing some blueprint on how to beat us defensively. You know, I also think, you know, to your point earlier, I mean, the amount of points that Tech scored actually like from the floor that weren't either second chance points or from the free throw line was just was very minimal, right? Our defense has come a long way in that regard. So, you know, yes, we have to limit the fouling. Yes, we have to clean up the glass. I mean, those are the biggest, I think, flags a little bit, especially the glass. But, you know, this team's strength has never been its defense. I think, you know, if we can improve from maybe where we were in that, you know, 80 to 70 efficiency range to maybe closer to that 30 to 40 efficiency range, which I think is well within our reach. You know, that's going to make a huge difference as long as we're, you know, scoring the basketball like we have the majority of the season. So, you know, I'm not concerned in this team's long-term potential or ceiling, and I do think there's a lot of lessons learned. You know, one thing about Coach Odom that I've seen over the years is when there is kind of a lesson to be learned, he grabs it like right away, and I would be expecting to see a lot of these adjustments come through pretty quickly. So, you know, not worried. It just stinks to start off, you know, in a hole in the ACC, especially to a rival.
Yeah, it was kind of like, why are we playing UVA Virginia Tech on New Year's Eve, first of all?
Yeah,
it's just not the great way to start things off. But yeah, I think there's, you know, a lot that Ryan Odom is probably going to fix and take from this game. But also there's a lot that Virginia is probably just not going to do anymore. You would think is shoot 22% from three on 10 of 45 three-pointers, give up 50 points from the free throw line plus second chance points. You know, that made up the majority of Tech's offense in this game. You would like to think that Virginia is going to get a little bit of the benefit from that going forward, and that maybe this was just the perfect storm. And it took three overtimes still for Virginia to go out without a win in this game. And so I think there's plenty to look forward in ACC play. And I wanted to do this on my next podcast, but I'll do it here with you now. If you had to rank your top six ACC teams, and I can go first so you can kind of think about this a little bit, which way would you go? I would probably still go Duke, number one, UNC, and then Louisville. And then I'm still going to put Virginia fourth in that mix right now, because I think they have shown the fewest chinks in the armor out of the teams at the top. Then I probably put NC State number five, and we're going to talk about NC State a lot more coming up here. And then the sixth spot is kind of, I don't know which way you could go in this. SMU has looked really good lately. Clemson's looked pretty good lately. And Clemson started off ACC play with a win. I don't think I'd put Virginia Tech up there yet. I don't think I'd put Miami up there yet. So I'll probably give it to Clemson because I think they have kind of started to play pretty well lately. If so, I mean, that top six, where would you change?
No, I wouldn't change much. I think I'd put Clemson there. You know, it'll be interesting because my opinion on this will probably change after Virginia plays these teams, right? Because I watch so much Virginia over the years. Yeah. I mean, I watch the other teams, but I don't watch them in the same level of detail, and then as soon as they play Virginia, then I have all these thoughts, right? But I think it's you know, from what I've seen, I definitely would still have Duke first. I'm not fully sold on UNC yet. I mean, I think they have a lot of potential to play up to teams level, but I think I would still take Louisville over them. You know, as a, you know, as the second team, I think they have some flaws, but they've been banged up some too, and their overall sort of just offensive prowess, I think, you know, would make them a little more threatening from my point of view. And then I think UNC, you have to give them the nod based on how they've played so far. I like Virginia fourth. I mean, I still think Virginia has everything in front of them, and if they can figure a few things out, is going to be as threatening as anyone. You know, NC State maybe fifth. I could see them, you know, in that sixth discussion. You know, I think Clemson's right there. I think SMU's right there. I think, you know, NC State's probably, got the pedigree and just kind of talent edge on both, but they haven't been playing that way. Like if you were to play them now, I would imagine that they might lose to those teams. So long term, I would still probably give them the nod, but I don't think the gap there is huge.
No, I don't either. We're about to talk about NC State just to preview Saturday's game down in Raleigh. We're going to find out about Louisville pretty soon. They play Duke next week on January 6th at home. So that's going to be one of the bigger matchups in the ACC this year. That's why the ACC made the scheduling changes that they did so that they could assign Louisville and Duke to play these two head-to-head games this season. But let's look at NC State now coming into this game. The Wolfpack are sitting at 10-4, 1-0 in ACC play. They opened the year with a win over Wake Forest in the ACC. But I want to talk about what are some key matchups, stats, things that we need to watch in this game as we kind of get ready for it.
Man, I mean, I think the fact that our size should give them trouble is the biggest thing to watch for. I mean, they are an undersized team in general. They're not, they shouldn't be, and of course Tech shouldn't have been either, but they shouldn't be the offensive rebounding threat that we just saw in terms of keeping them off the glass. I think if we take some of the lessons from the Tech game that I hope that we will, and play inside out a little bit more often, especially if we're not shooting it early against them, we should be fine. I mean, our length inside should be successful. I think DeRitter should be able to kind of place a little more bully ball than normal as long as he's feeling confident and kind of not being loose with the handle. If we get him the ball a little bit deeper as well, I think that could be effective. They're a great shooting team. They're gonna be taking a lot of shots. Darian Williams hasn't been in great form lately, so I think that's to our benefit if that continues. We'll see who guards him. One thing we didn't talk about is I think DeRitter could potentially be a little bit more of a flexible defensive option than we've been using him. I think he could guard DeRitter. I mean, Williams, I think Lewis could too. But I think DeRitter could have even guarded Abdallah some if we wanted to make some shifts there, especially when Tillis was on the floor. So, I think we've got some defensive options. We're going to have to hope the shooting variance swings our way in this one because, they're the kind of team that could just get hot and then that's kind of, how the game goes, but so could we. And I think we have sort of that permanent advantage in the front court as long as we're willing to use it. That's where I would lean toward us in a matchup like this. I think we actually could be a pretty tough matchup for a team like NC State.
I think there's a lot of similarities between these two teams. You look at the 3-point shooting. NC State's the only team shooting more attempts and on a better percentage than UVA in the ACC right now. Both teams foul a lot. I think they're two of the most fouling teams in the ACC, whatever the term you want to use there for that. They both kind of had these bigs that they play in the versatile fours that they play in the front court that are supposed to carry a lot of their scoring weight. But I think the biggest difference, and this is what I've been saying since, gosh, it must have been since July, I've been talking about this, is like I am very skeptical about NC State's front court. And when you have Vin Allen Lubin as your primary big man who has to play the majority of the minutes in the front court, it raises a lot of questions. NC State is 13th in the ACC in rebounding and second to last in offensive rebounding. So you would hope that offensive rebounding figure continues in a game like this, where Virginia can maybe have a little bit more success ending possessions because NC State's not hitting the boards very hard. And then you look at having guys like Johan Grunloe and Ogani Ugani-Onyensu and Tess DeRitter, that maybe you have a big size advantage in a matchup like this. And that's kind of where when I look at the similarities between these teams, that's the one difference that I think Virginia actually has an advantage in is their size, maybe getting more offensive rebounds, attacking the glass, getting physical inside, and trying to find some of those shots inside. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out because I've been talking about the NC State big man situation since their roster was kind of finalized this summer. And it's been a big question mark, and it's kind of played out that way so far this season. You mentioned Darion Williams. He's only scored in double figures in one of his last five games. And I don't know if you heard this one, but Will Wade went on a pretty impassioned speech that made the rounds about Darion Williams' play as of late. So it'll be interesting to see maybe if that lights a fire under him going into this game.
Yeah, hopefully not. I mean, I didn't hear the speech, but I did see the sort of clip that he was basically, asking people to back off or something. I
Yeah,
didn't actually
that
watch
was
it.
pretty much it. Yeah, he called it a bad question to ask about Deron Williams' performance as of late, which I've mentioned was not great. He only had 1 point in their win against Ole Miss throughout the entire
Yeah,
40 minutes of that
I
game.
saw
So
that. Yeah.
it hasn't been great for him lately, but obviously he's a player that comes in with an immense reputation. He was the ACC preseason player of the year, so he's a good player, just hasn't had it as of late.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to, yeah, I mean, to your point earlier, like, we have been such a good offensive rebounding team. Like it w didn't show up against Tech. They did a really good job on the glass. I think we only got like eight offensive boards, even though some of those were pretty impactful. But a lot of that was the way that Tech was defending us because we weren't shooting, right? And I think, yeah, that is just a huge advantage over NC State, sort of across the board. And even if we're not initiating some of our offense on the inside, I still think we're gonna do a pretty good job with points in the paint, based on our ability to crash down there, and be one of the top 10 teams in the country at doing so.
Yeah, hopefully they get there early enough for a shoot around. It's an 11 a.m. Tip off, which I'm all for, man. Like, get this game out of the way early in the day. Look, I'm a soccer fan, so I'm used to waking up at 7:30 a.m. to watch soccer games, and like that game's over, and then I have the rest of the day ahead of me. So
Yeah, there you go. Doesn't have
I
to break
like
up your
it.
afternoon. Yeah.
Exactly. Like some of these like later tip offs, it just kind of consumes your whole day. So get it out of the way early in the day. Give me more 11 a.m. tip offs. Cuts, appreciate you coming on here, especially so last second to talk about a great basketball game. But lots of good stuff to talk about and a lot more UVA basketball ahead. So remember to hit the bell icon, subscribe on YouTube to the Who's On podcast, follow, subscribe, leave some 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify as we kick off this new year with some hoops. We will also be back next week with some basketball and some football. Talk about some more of the transfer portal. I will have Brandon Marks on Monday on this podcast to break down the NC State game and talk a little bit more about the ACC at large. So stay tuned. Till then, we'll see you next week.